Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, July 18th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email, sending on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could, and of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an incredible episode we have for you this week. We must get started. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I'm so ready to go.
Let me introduce you. Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins has just released The Crossing, her long-awaited first album of new songs in years. Since her instantaneous 1992 breakthrough with the crowd-favorite hit single Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover, and her acclaimed debut album Tongues and Tales, she has sung her way into our hearts, certainly into my heart, as an enduring artist whose passion and authenticity shine through every note of every song she puts out there. She followed Tongues and Tales with the album Wailer, which was both a pivotal part of my own development as a human being, which we will talk about, and it also, of course, featured the smash ballad As I Lay Me Down, which remains the longest-running hit single in the Billboard charts in American history. In addition to several more incredible albums, Sophie also lends her voice to causes that make a difference in this world, including responding to the Gulf oil crisis, water protection, working to prevent cruelty to children, and even doing her part to help the one and only Hillary Clinton. It is an honor and a privilege to say these next few words. Sophie B. Hawkins, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
First of all, I'm so happy to speak with you. And I love the title, The Show Is So Gay.
We're so gay for years now.
You make me feel happy. You make me feel really comfortable.
Well, good. Well, hopefully that will continue. We have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, we have to get two very important fan favorite questions just out of the way so we can talk about important things. Number one most important question, Sophie B. Hawkins, everybody wants to know, do you still have the sleeveless plaid shirt you wore in the video for Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover?
Of course I do, and I will never, ever give it away.
Yay! You know where it is right this very second?
Yes, I do, and I know where those jeans are, but those jeans have not fared as well. Those jeans are hanging on by a thread right by the crotch area, and I tried to put them on for my latest show, and my manager said, absolutely not, you can't do that. And I said, well, if I ever win an award, then I'm going to wear these jeans.
I love it. With, of course, that shirt.
Of course, with that shirt.
I love it.
I love that outfit. And by the way, isn't that outfit back in style?
That outfit never left style, Sophie B. Hawkins. Come on.
So true. Listen, and I got to add to this for a second. By the way, of course, I didn't buy the shirt or the jeans. The shirt I found at somebody's house, you know, probably when I was 14 years old. And the jeans were my brother's jeans. He worked in a garage, so that's how they got so nice and holy. But he would give me all his jeans once they got to a point where he couldn't work in them anymore, which is perfect for performance. I never buy clothes, and my latest outfit I've been wearing, I swear to God, I've worn my shirt on stage, that light blue thing with the ruffles, since Chris Isaac gave it to me back in 98.
Do you love that you have a story that says, remember that shirt that Chris Isaac gave me?
Yes, and it's really, isn't that deep, and I didn't realize it till I told you, Ken. Every article of clothing usually comes from a boy that I love.
Nice.
And it has that, I have that sense of, well, like I said when I was speaking to you, that sense of comfort when I walk on stage. I don't care who says I'm not fashionable, I just feel good in it.
I was able to pretend there in the Chris Isaac Wicked Game video that woman wasn't even in it. He was singing it to me.
You are, and you know, he may have been.
He may have, who knows? Now, the other most important fan favorite question, how many times have people told you over the years that they heard As I Lay Me Down sitting in a courtyard on a February morning, which felt like springtime, because, Sophie B. Hawkins, I really did hear As I Lay Me Down sitting in the courtyard of Weinstein Hall at NYU on my birthday, February 20th, on an unseasonably spring-like day.
Don't make me cry, because guess what?
Tell me.
I wrote it so close to you. I was on Bleecker Street.
Oh, my gosh.
6th Avenue.
Right around the corner.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. So by the way, that spring morning that happens, that spring morning that feels like spring in February, that probably happens once a year or maybe twice a year. I don't know how many times it happens. That we probably felt at the exact same time.
Oh.
And I wrote the song, and then you probably felt it when it came out years later.
We don't need listeners. This is just a conversation with you and I. This is great.
It's because nobody has ever exactly said what you said, but I know. No one has ever told me exactly what you said, but I know, because when I'm in New York and I feel that feeling, I go, doesn't anybody else feel this feeling? And every time I sing those lyrics, it's such an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
It makes me smile inside, which is kind of a teary smile, you know?
I have to tell you, I remember it so specifically because it was my birthday, and it was right before, I swear to you, right before I came out to my parents, and that song played such a role in it. So
wow.
you always have that place in my heart. And look, we were just blocks away from each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we should tell everyone, you are a native Manhattanite, are you not?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell everyone what growing up in Manhattan is like.
Well, it's very nurturing because you, as anyone who's ever been to New York or especially lived in New York knows, you walk out on the street and everything's done for you. You have the world at your toes. And when I was growing up, we would run through the park barefoot. We'd get stoned at the band show. I skateboarded everywhere. I was really a free kid. And that was the 70s when I was growing up, so I was particularly free. And I would say there was the sense that you could just, if you were sitting there, you could be and do anything. Because New York had everything.
Yeah.
There wasn't the sense that you were in a small town and you had to get somewhere. You were there. Now, by the way, I didn't know small towns. I knew New York. New York was my small town.
Look at that.
And New York is still my small
no.
town. It's really amazing to me. I never understood until I was older and got into quote unquote show business, which I didn't even understand show business until probably 10 years ago. I didn't understand what a big deal it was to, you know, if I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere.
Oh yeah.
And that's, isn't that interesting? And now kind of having been away from New York, as I don't live there all the time now. Now I understand that, and now I have that feeling if I can make it there, like with the Broadway musical we wrote, if I can make it there playing Janice in Room 105, if I can make it there, I understand those feelings, and it's really been good for me to leave and understand the preciousness of what I grew up in. But just to say, for me, it was like, as a native New Yorker, you're just so comfortable. And by the way, I'm comfortable everywhere in the world because New York has everywhere
yeah.
in the world in it. So I never had a problem going to other countries. If people said, oh, you're going to Paris, you need to learn to speak French, I was like, I'll learn when I get there. And that's exactly what I did, and I had that attitude. And so I never stressed about being in the world the way other people do. I have to become something to be something to be in the world. I was already in the world. I did have to be something for myself.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in relationship to other people.
Now, is there a part of you as a mom that do you want to make sure that your son has some New York City experience?
You know, he has it in him so much. First of all, he has a New York accent.
Nice.
Which is very funny to people in Venice, California. Where did he get that accent? Well, it's just within him. It's in his genetic code.
Yeah.
Second of all, whenever we're in New York, he is just as free and confident as he is anywhere. So I think it really is in him, and I think the beauty for Dashiell is that if he chooses to live in New York, it will be his city.
Yeah.
Because everyone in New York who goes there, and you can admit this, it becomes their city.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether they've been there a week or 10 years or they were born there. And some of the native people, I used to see this, would be like, how can it be your city? I grew up here, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
And that is the beauty of New York. Whoever gets there and decides to stay there, it's their city. So if Dashiell wants it, P.S., I want to end up in New York so badly. Like, I look forward to being 50 years old, and Dashiell is set, and, you know, he knows what he wants to do, and he's in the place where he can manifest his dreams, and I can say, okay, great, I'm getting my apartment in New York now.
On Bleecker yeah. Street.
Right, and he may be there and he may not, but that's where he can come visit me. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the last third of my life I will be in New York and saying, thank God I did this, I did that, I raised an amazing son, here I am.
Now, I have to tell you, and this is not me passive-aggressively giving my notice to my place of employment, I want to end up there too.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's the best. It's
the best. You've ended up there having done what you were needed to do, and I think that's the thing about life where we have to we have to really hustle. We have to push and hustle
mm-hmm.
in the beginning of our life. We have to make it. There's no question. If people don't have that drive to make it, then it's almost like you're cutting off a part of your human quality, right?
Right?
And then there's a certain point where you know you're doing it for yourself, and then you have to make it for yourself and all this. But then there's that last part of life where you really know that everything from now on is really just to live the life you really need to live.
Yeah.
I think that must be what a lot of people feel, because that's certainly what I'm looking forward to.
Now, let's talk about some singing. Tell me about some early Sophie B. Hawkins singing memories. What are your earliest singing memories?
Well, I have a really interesting memory. I was a drummer, as you probably know.
Yes, of course.
And I was an African drummer first, and then I played the vibraphone and marimba, and I was a jazz musician. And I worked my butt off to be a great vibraphone player, a great African percussionist, all of that. And then drum set player. And then at some point, and I went to Manhattan School of Music for a year, and I was really cool at timpanis and classical marimba. And then, at some point, I sat in the dictation room I was practicing dictation, like in the music schools, there's a little piano in a little room.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat at that piano, and I put my hands down, and I just started to cry because I said, wait a minute. This is what I really am.
Oh.
I just knew I was going to write songs. I just felt it. So I left school and I started to have bands. I would join them as a drummer, of course. I always joined them as a drummer first. One of the bands let me start to sing my songs, called the Pink Men. Del, his name was. He let me sing my songs from behind the drums. And my earliest singing memory was finishing my song called Dark Loose, and then he apologized for my singing.
Oh.
And I realized at that moment, like, I had felt like, you know, I told you I loved to be in my blue jeans in my flannel shirt.
Yeah.
I loved to be in New York. And I never felt the self-consciousness that I wasn't supposed to be doing what I was doing. Then I suddenly got the picture that I wasn't really good at it. And I thought that writing a great song was going to make the singing okay. Like, because I grew up listening to Bob Dylan, and his voice was just his voice, you know?
Right.
It didn't dawn on me that I had to become a singer. Well, so that was one of my earliest memories, and then I realized I had to understand what singing was, maybe on a deeper level.
Well, I was just, you're kind of one step ahead of me, because my next question was, because I love the opportunity to talk to all of these artists over the years who, everyone seems to have that moment where people said, maybe this isn't the right path for you. And it was that moment of epiphany, that moment of persistence that really led to that full exploration of voice. And that sounds like, that story sounds like that was one of the pieces of that journey.
Right. And the beautiful thing is, I've come back to a little bit of that unselfconsciousness where at that time, music was so raw and immediate, and everyone's music was so individual. And by the way, remember, this is before computers, before CDs, before auto-tune, when people really did sing and it was their voice. And I accepted Whitney Houston as this great singer, but it never dawned on me that I would be compared to a great singer. And I accepted, like I said, Bob Dylan or the Rolling Stones or Maria Callas, that they were all who they were and I was me. And then it suddenly, that consciousness, like as a drummer I had that consciousness, but see, I thought the voice was sacred, where you don't mess with people's voice. I actually, until that point, purposefully said, I will never take a singing lesson.
Right.
Because it seemed to corrupt the art. Now, I'm studying for Janis Joplin, and so, you know, cut to, after all these years, and really, really working on my craft, really trying to master what is my voice. And now I'm studying to play Janis Joplin, and I'm doing her in live shows. And let me tell you, I am in a master class now, because that woman can really sing.
She could belt.
And not only that, like I'm studying her by writing every single inflection out on the page, so I don't miss a thing, because it's an honor to be able to play her. So I'm not going to shortchange it, the process. And I'm studying Bessie Smith and Big Mama Thornton, because that's who she studied, and Ma Rainey. Well, when I sit down at the piano and I put on her CD and I rewind and I rewind and I rewind to get that lick and to write down the inflections and to get it in my head and in my voice, I realize, whoa. This is a singer.
Yeah.
This woman put everything into every little moment of her singing. Whereas a lot of times, you know, us songwriters, we kind of just do the meaning. We do the general meaning, you know, of the whole phrase is just a sort of general, here's the poetry. So that's where I'm at now, is really studying. But this is the first time I've really ever studied another singer on this level.
And to back up a step, we talk about Broadway all the time here on This Show Is So Gay, as we naturally would. Look at you venturing into Broadway.
Yeah, I wrote this musical with Gigi Gaston. She brought it into me. It's the most amazing musical. It's changed titles 3 times, so I might as not even want to. And poor Kristen Chenoweth had that accident. But she did the reading for us in September, last September or 2 Septembers ago, I don't remember which, in New York, of course. And she played the lead, and we wrote it for her. And now it seems like we have to wait a little bit because she has to get better, of course, and there's no problem waiting for her because she's the greatest.
It's Kristen Chenoweth, yeah.
Yeah, you just wait for Kristen Chenoweth, and we love her so much. So, yeah, we wrote this thing, and it's a totally original classic. Because it's a classic, because it's got that old classic My Fair Lady Pygmalion meets Annie Get Your Gun feel, so it's a classic in that sense, and it really has an innocence to it, even though it's sexy and seductive and sensual, it's very innocent, and that's beautiful, and I really want to preserve that about it. But it's new. It's totally new.
Yeah.
And original. And so I'm so grateful she committed to that, and it's been so much work, but we have definitely put that on the back burner because Janice is happening now, and Kristen needs to recover.
Right. Right. Well, my gosh, one of my favorite parts of your website, I have so much fun on your website. There's a lot to do on your website.
Wow.
There's a lot to explore. And one of my favorite sections is the fan Q&A. And there's a great question on there that I wanted to get even more input from you on. One of your fans asked you, what will it take for rock and roll to stop being a boys' game? Which, this could not be more apropos, talking about Janis Joplin.
Right.
And part of your answer, you wrote, if you're asking why women give away their power more today than ever as a social opinion, I don't have the answer. Why women accept what they accept and give themselves away for free boggles my mind. I love this line, every great species depends on strong women to define and lead and teach them. Don't get me going on this issue. And that was a quote. I kind of want to get you going on this issue. Have you seen an evolution in the music industry? Has it gotten better? Because we hear these horror stories, those of us on the outside, about just how difficult it is to be a woman and establish your voice in this industry.
Yeah, you know, I think it's gotten worse, really, because women, like I said, women, and I see this, I have a son now. How amazing is it that I am raising a boy?
Yeah.
A man, and he came out a man. He's one of these very macho guys.
A New York man, no less.
Yeah, and you know, probably at this point, but people are born the way they're born. And so I feel, as his mother, I see men, this man in my life who's only 3 years old, testing me all the time and trying to gain control and, you know, boss me around. And so it starts at, you know, 2,
mm-hmm.
and it continues through life that he wants to get what he wants as quickly as he can get it. And it doesn't matter, no matter how much he loves you, he wants to be satisfied and relieved of his pain immediately,
yeah.
Right? And it starts with the mother. So the mother has a really hard job, I think, in teaching men to be respectful and self-disciplined and patient and all the responsible, accountable. This is all the mother's job, right?
Yeah.
And if a mother fails at that, and if your mother is a father, because I know lots of gay men who are raising boys as well.
Right.
And the same goes for them. The mother is just sort of an archetype. It can be a man or a woman, right? If the mother or man-mother fails at this job, then you've ruined society.
Right.
Because you've created a man, and hopefully not a handsome man, because then they get whatever they want all the time.
Yeah.
Who has absolutely zero accountability and responsibility and will run riot over women. Because they've been taught that they can. And stupidly, on the other hand, and when I have a daughter, I'll have to handle this, mothers don't raise their daughters to say no. By the way, Dashiell is so easy to say no to. He loves the word no. He's waiting for the word no. He's begging for it in all his bad behavior. He just wants you to put him in the naughty chair and say no.
No.
He loves it. He relaxes. He gets the picture. He never does it again if you punish him, right?
Right.
Well, so this is the point with women. They never punish their men. And I love women go, my man, my man, my man, my man, my man, my man, my man. And you go, what, is he a boyfriend? Is he a husband? Is he a person? Does he have a name? Or is he just that, my man, you like having a my man to push you around?
Right.
And I want to say, wake up.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you beautiful. It doesn't make you sexy. It makes you an idiot. The strongest, sexiest women. Oh, by the way, the sexiest women are the strongest women. And the most intelligent women are the sexiest women. Please, ladies, So by the way, I guess I am blaming women. I'm blaming women or the men who raised the son. I'm blaming that person.
But you're also saying that we have the power to make the change that we need to make.
Any man, even a 50-year-old man, if he meets a girl that he really wants and she starts disciplining him, he'll fall right into line because he wants what he wants. And the woman has the power. And until women realize that they really do have the power, it will never be the woman's. And the women don't play. And this is the thing. I was going to say the woman's game, like the woman's club. Women don't need a club. Women don't need to hang around in groups. All they really need is to have respect and do what they know is right and to keep the moral ground really high. Men might need clubs and all that jazz. But women don't need that, and they should know they don't need that, and they don't need to control people. They need to tell the truth, and tell the truth is saying no, and disciplining, like I'm saying,
yeah.
And keeping the moral ground really high. It's for the society's benefit, you know. But anyway, so the answer to the question is women have lost so much ground, and they give it away. And I'm going to say this about lots of minorities, too. They give it away so cheaply. They don't really make actions fit the words. They believe the words, and it's crazy.
And then one way that people can be put down is to start rumors about them. And you certainly, throughout your career, quite an interesting read about you there on the veritable trove of probably not correct data on Wikipedia. But I was reading how, you know, back in the day, it was, well, Sophie B. Hawkins is with Jodie Foster. No, Sophie B. Hawkins is dating Martina Navratilova. And I read that you've never even met any of those people.
Now, that's interesting. Never met Jodie Foster. I've met Martina, but we never did date. I respect her so much. I adore her, but we never did date.
And so those rumors have a way of people trying to control who you are in the industry as well.
How did Jodie Foster rumors start? I've never even been in the same room with her.
I have no. I didn't start it, I promise you.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. So did you spend just such a big part of dealing with the press and answering questions about sexual orientation just throughout your career?
You know, and it used to bother me, too. For some, you know what used to bother me was that people, my very, very gay activist friends in New York would get so mad at me if I said I was omnisexual or bisexual. And by the way, it's the truth. My first great love was my African drum teacher. And I mean deep, deep, great love. And so there's no way that I could ever say, oh, I don't like men. Are you kidding me? I love men. I'm passionate about men. I am involved with a woman, committed relationship for 19 years, maybe 17. I don't even remember. It doesn't matter.
It's a while.
Right? It's a long time. Right. We have a kid. We have a great, great family. But it never will take away my passion and love for men.
Right.
So I don't feel right about saying I'm just a lesbian, because part of me is a lesbian. Part of me is a heterosexual. Part of me is homosexual, bisexual. Part of me is nothing. I don't want anything to do with anybody. Part of me wants to just go away from everybody sometimes and say, this is such a boring BS identification game.
Labels, know? Labels.
Right. So the thing about the press which used to bother me is if every time I tell the truth, it gets printed in a way to satisfy the publication. And then my friends would get mad at me. Like, you're not supporting my cause. And I finally just said, you're not a friend then, because I'm not supporting your cause. You're supporting your cause. And this gets back to the whole thing about, you know, raising a strong individual and being a strong individual. It really takes so much work all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have to say, one of the things I love about you, and oh my gosh, are there a ton of things that I love about you, is that you don't shy away from using your voice when there's a cause that you believe in. And so I said in the intro, you really have lent your voice to just, it's so clear how passionate you are. Tell me why you got involved with some of these causes, like water protection. Why was that something important for you to lend your voice to?
Well, water is always, you know, going to Long Island and swimming in the ocean, water has always been my thing. Plus, I think water symbolizes a lot within us, like our unconscious, our dreams. You know, every time someone goes to the shore or hears water, they completely relax.
Yeah.
Isn't it something like 90% of our body?
Yeah.
So water is huge for me, and it's symbolic, and it's poetic, and it's just powerful. So to protect our waters is like protecting our psyche. It's protecting ourselves. It's protecting our future. And so That's a natural, and the BP water spill, well, that was really so shocking to me to see that oil spilling into the ocean, into the Gulf, and feeling so powerless as we all did. And I believe, by the way, that's why so many people shut it off. It was just too painful to watch all that oil spilling in, and then to hear, oh, the oil's all cleaned up, you know. Well, I just have been around cleanup processes long enough to know none of that is true. Oh, mm-hmm. BP saving their butt or whatever. And then I went, and you know, I went down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I went down to the Gulf immediately as fast as I could because I do have a child and everything. So I went down during a hurricane, actually, and me and Gigi went down with our friend Richard Grinnell and this guy who, and his name is slipping my mind right this second, but he invented this technology, and he was on, he had a YouTube video which had millions and millions of hits, that it could pick up water off the surface. So we said, well, that's something we can do. Let's go and try it. At least
right.
we're doing something. And you know, it was illegal. We went out on a boat. We were chased by police helicopters. It's all in my video, which is probably on my website, the video Sinnerman. All that footage of us being chased by police boats and helicopters is true. And we just went out there onto the Gulf, and we started cleaning up that oil. And we didn't care if it was illegal because we knew that the truth was buried. We knew that it wasn't being cleaned.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, by the way. And the dispersants, of course, everyone knows this now. The dispersants that BP used, they were more toxic than the oil. And to say that it's all come back, well, it hasn't all come back. And those people's jobs, the indigenous people of New Orleans, of the Gulf, the Grand Isle, they'll never have their jobs back. It was ruined forever.
Jeez.
And you want to know something? I think that's when I was outspoken against the administration for not doing anything and for covering it up. And I think, you know, the Bush administration obviously would have done the same thing. It wasn't like I'm saying Democrats are bad, but I was saying somebody's got to recognize that Democrats right now are being just the same. They're covering this up. They're sending all the rigs to Brazil for Petrobras. By the way, all those jobs were lost. You know, Democrat or Republican, what they did was they killed the industry of shrimping and fishing. They killed those fish, and then they sent the rigs away never to return all those jobs. I mean, and to Petrobras. I mean, don't give it to Brazil. Keep it here.
Keep it here.
Keep it up and start again fresh in a safer way. It's unbelievable to me how politics is, and it doesn't matter, again, what party you're in.
Yeah.
We the people really need to get involved because, or else you're just, they're taking everything from you. They're raping you.
There's so much work to do.
There's so much work.
That's all I keep thinking.
And by the way, to me, I don't get really overwhelmed. I go, wow, there's so much work to do. What am I going to do today?
What am I going to do today?
People, I'm just sort of like have that attitude. What do I do today? And sometimes I say, well, I can't do anything today, so I'm just going to write a song, and that's my job today. Take care of my son and write a song. Well, you know, you can do the nothing, or you can do just a little bit every day. And so I chose the Water Keeper Alliance, and every time somebody buys that song, The Land, the Sea, and the Sky, and I think the video is up there on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and it's on iTunes, every time somebody buys The Land, the Sea, and the Sky, every penny goes to the Water Keeper Alliance.
Love it.
Yeah, and see, I know I can't do that work. I'm not going to sit there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, protecting our waters, but they are, so let's support them. That's my attitude.
Is it okay that in answer to the question, what are you going to do today, my answer is I'm going to talk to Sophie B. Hawkins on the phone?
Sure.
Okay, good.
Great.
I want to make my difference.
You're so right, and you know, the thing is, we don't all have to do something today.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't shut people down for doing something. That's the truth. We shouldn't say, oh, well, you're not a gay, this or that, so we're not going to talk to you.
Right.
There's great people doing things all the time, and they may be Mormons or they may be conservatives. And I've gotten a lot of flack for Richard Grinnell is a gay Republican. He's the one who said, get your butt down to the Gulf. And I was like, I have a child, and there's a hurricane. And I have a tour next week. And he said, I don't care. That's a gay Republican. So I don't like it when my friends who are gay liberals say, we don't let Republicans in our house. And I say, oh yeah, even if they're cleaning up your waters.
There's too much work to do for us to go that route.
And that's what I'm saying. I was very vocal about that. Then people got so mad at me for, you know, doing all that. For aligning myself with Richard. Well, he's a great man.
Yeah.
A great man.
No, there's more than enough work to go around. There's more than enough. Well,
right?
We do have to talk about your music, my friend.
Let's do it.
We have to talk about it. Because I don't know if you know, there's a new album out called The Crossing.
Yes.
This is, we all love it. This is the part of the show, Sophie B. Hawkins, where you tell our listening audience, I'm going to give you a couple of your song selections, and you're going to tell our listening audience what you think that they say about Sophie B. Hawkins, and you can do it in the third person if that makes you comfortable.
Sure, anyway.
So I have to tell you one of my favorite tracks off the album. What does Georgia say about Sophie B. Hawkins?
Oh, God. See, I love Georgia. I have to say it's one of my favorite songs. Because the beginning is, it's this, even though I grew up in New York, that sense of bare feet, rural, the simplicity of being with somebody and being in nature. You know, the sun is coming, the grass is, your body is warm, the grass is cold. So it's like saying, even though this is so seductive and I want to lie with you and sleep with you forever, I've got work to do.
Yeah.
Like that great poem, you know, Miles to Go Before I Sleep by Robert Frost. So that song starts out saying, I love being in bed with you, but I've got to do things in the world, and I'm young. And that's the beginning of the song. And then it evolves to the chorus where it's saying, I'm young, but you're younger, and you're not doing anything. You're so young, and so, Georgia, I love you. Georgia, I love you. You're so young, and so cynical, and so passive. So there's this beautiful person. You're tall. Georgia, you're fine. You're 6 feet tall. All that, this, like, again, archetype, most gorgeous, is it a woman, is it a man? It's sort of a woman-man. And, because I call her George in the second verse.
Yeah.
So it's, this is the most, like, the perfect lover. And saying, but the problem with you is that, you know, your beauty and brains, your beauty is going to help you as long as it lasts, but it won't last forever. That's in the last chorus, you know. George, I love you. Can't you hear in the distance your train is whistling? That is saying you've got a calling out there, and you better get on the train, because if you miss the train, doesn't matter how young and beautiful, captivating you are, you'll be nothing and you'll be nowhere.
Love
That's
it.
What that song is about. It's really saying to her, or her, him, whoever this is, you can't just sit on your laurels of your youth for the rest of your life. You've got to find yourself. And it says you're casting your dreams down a well that's hollow. In your eyes, you're just looking for someone to follow. And I'm saying to Georgia, I'm not going to be that person. You have to be that person.
Yeah. I love it. I'm going to go a little bit off album for the last song that you got to do a little self-analysis, because I can't have you on and not talk about my favorite song. Tell everyone what Don't Tell Me No.
Oh, you're so cute. That song I wrote for a very, very specific person, and who I'll never say.
In my head, it's me. Can we just say for the sake of the interview, it's me?
Specific person, Ken.
Okay.
And isn't that a beautiful song? I love it. It says, don't tell me no, because it's admitting that there's this sort of struggle.
Yeah.
And a little bit, but you're not going to relinquish.
Right.
You're going to keep going.
There's some fight.
Yes. 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 And I love that there's this admittance that you're so comfortable with this person that you've crashed on their shore, and you're going to live with that fight and that struggle, and that's going to be part of it. That's why I like that song, is it never stops. That song never stops. The struggle never stops, but it's a beautiful struggle of love, and it's like a boxing dance.
Well, you have so much going on. You have the Broadway show you're working on as soon as Kristen gets better. You have The Crossing, and you are touring, are you not? You're all over the place.
Yes, and I just played San Francisco. It's last night or the night before, and it was so, and LA was sold out, and San Francisco was almost sold out, which is great, because that means I'm coming back, because, you know, San Francisco has never been a good market for me, strangely enough. It was fantastic.
Great.
It was really one of the best shows I did. So I'm doing The Crossing. And by the way, I'm playing Janis Joplin in a play musical called Room 105, which is October 4th in L.A., West Hollywood, at the Maca Theater. And it's going to be 3 weeks. I think it's four nights a week. So that's going to be 12 shows of this incredible play musical. Of course, it's Janis's music. And it's a very dramatic and beautiful play. So that's, believe me, I've never done anything like that before. It's quite exciting and difficult.
It's just another check mark on the list.
Yeah, for you. For me, it's like death-defying.
Well, I have to tell you, I have these opportunities to speak to people that I never in my life would have dreamed I would be able to get on the phone and have on the show. And I can't tell you what a dream come true this is for me. It really was. Whaler was such a pivotal part. It coincided perfectly with my coming out timeline. It's like we wrote it together, and I sat there in that courtyard and I listened to your music, and it really fortified me in a way that I didn't really think was possible. And the thing that I love about you is that it's not just about you putting out your music, but you do invest your life in these causes, in things that are clearly important to you that make such a difference. And this show is about nothing if not people using their voice to make a difference in this world. And Sophie B. Hawkins, you are doing it every day.
Thank you so much, Ken. And so are you.
Well, I'm doing my part. I'm doing my part. So everyone should go over to SophieBHawkins.com, right? We love the website.
Yes, we do. Hey, you know what people love on my website lately is those bears that sing As I Lay Me Down, and it sings the whole song.
Does it play the whole song? I didn't know how much it played.
The whole song, from beginning to very end, when I say, and the sun comes out again, the sun comes out again. That plays it, and also there's a gorilla there which plays a new song, which is very good for people who want children. A lot of people came up to me at my San Francisco show, how is it to be a parent? We're thinking of having a child. Well, this new song is called A Child, and I wrote this before Dashiell came. In fact, this is the song that brought Dashiell, I think, into the universe for me. And that's in the gorilla. So if anyone's thinking of having a child or trying to get pregnant or whatever, adopt, go and get that gorilla. The song is A Child, and it's really evokes the child's spirit, waiting for you to be the parent.
But you're okay with the fact that I don't have a child and still I'm going to get one?
Yes, because you can be the child, too.
Thank you. I need that permission straight from you. I have a cat.
Okay, a cat. I was going to say a dog or a cat. My cat is my child. My cat is my first daughter, so it doesn't have to be just a human.
All right. And people will hear my cat, who is in another room right now, trying to get into the studio because I'm convinced that my cat wants to talk to you, too. So it goes around and around.
Oh, God, I love cats.
All right, so folks, you need to go on over to where fine music is sold and pick up The Crossing. Go to SophieBHawkins.com. There are stuffed animals that play songs. What more do you need, folks? Janis Joplin musicals coming up. Sophie B. Hawkins, what an absolute honor to have you on the show.
Me, too.
You're going to keep on singing?
Yes, I am, forever.
All right, when that show comes out, we want you back on the show.
Okay.
All the best, Sophie. Thank you.
Take care, Ken.
Bye.
The sun is coming, your body's warm, the grass is cold. But the summer's over and I can't spend another day kicking down the dirt road. Georgia, you're fine, you're 10 feet tall. I could only love you more and more. But isn't it time we say goodbye? And I get it.
All right, folks, and we are back. Hello, Jody.
Hello, Ken.
And we are broadcasting live from the Marlboro Music Festival, so there might even be some strings in the background.
There might be.
It's very exciting. Everyone should come on out to Marlboro, Vermont, check out the Marlboro Music Festival, and, you know, apply to go to Marlboro College as long as you're here. It's something that we can pull off. Now, you just got back from vacation.
I did.
You had a Pride event.
Yes. Well, I attended one, yes.
And?
And it was adorable. It was the Prince Edward Island Pride Parade, and I think it lasted, if I'm being generous, 15 minutes.
Nice.
Yep.
The whole parade, the whole 15 minutes.
Yes.
Who was in the parade? Were you in the parade?
I could have. They offered. They said, everyone's welcome. Good. They were all very, very happy. They were like super excited and very happy, very pride, but very just really joyful and happy. You might say even gay.
Very gay.
Very gay, in every sense.
So who was actually in the parade? Were there any dykes on bikes?
Only bicycles.
Okay.
I don't believe there were actually any motorcycles.
All right.
There were some other vehicles.
Some P-flag people.
No.
Who was in the damn parade?
There were...
Not many people. Any drag queens?
Yes, there were a couple of drag queens.
All right.
Their Green Party, the Prince Edward Island Green Party, was bringing up the rear very strongly.
Okay.
They were the ones mostly with the bicycles, but there were some other bicycles. There was some folks representing their local humane society, and they had a dog that was up for adoption. Very cute.
A gay dog.
Perhaps indeed a gay dog.
I assume.
Yeah.
It
had rainbow stuff on it.
Okay.
It was a gay dog. Really sweet. Wanted to go home with me and Jen, I think, but that wouldn't have worked very well.
Oh, I would have taken the dog.
It would have been complicated.
It would have been very complicated getting a dog across country lines.
Yeah.
So that was your pride parade.
That was the pride parade. It was very
sweet. So you waved
sweet.
For 15 minutes?
Waved and took pictures and waited with some very lovely lesbians and their children on the corner of the road we were on.
Canadian Pride 2012.
Yep. In historic Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island.
Lovely.
Lovely. Yeah. All right, well, we do have quite a bit of news to talk about. We have talked about Chick-fil-A. What is your relationship with Chick-fil-A?
Ew.
Really?
Yeah, ew.
Have you ever had it?
I have had things resembling them, and they are not real food.
Well, I beg to differ, because anything that's yummy is food, and organic and locally grown. But I grew up going to the Chick-fil-A in Paramus Park in uh-huh. Paramus, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Very enjoyable.
Uh-huh.
Very enjoyable. I no longer eat fast food, and I'm a vegetarian. But I really miss Chick-fil-A.
Uh-huh.
But you can't miss Chick-fil-A because
no.
Chick-fil-A now is – there's been all these stories over the past couple of years about are they anti-gay? And all signs point to yes because they give tons of money to anti-gay causes.
Mm.
Now Chick-fil-A has come out of the closet. Yeah, no kidding. We're anti-gay.
Oh,
Dan Cathy, the chief operating officer of Chick-fil-A, said there is no denying that his company opposes marriage equality. He said that he does not feel right – billing Chick-fil-A as a Christian business because, as a Christian business mentor Fred Roach once said, there's no such thing as a Christian business. Christ never died for a corporation. However, Dan Cathy told the Baptist Press, which is a publication of some sort,
mm-hmm.
that he aims to operate the restaurant chain, quote, on biblical principles. On biblical principles.
Then he shouldn't be serving what he serves.
When asked whether his company had an established position against marriage equality, he said, quote, guilty as charged. We are very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit. We are a family-owned business, a family-led business, and we are married to our first wives. We give God thanks for that. We know that it might not be popular with everyone, but thank the Lord we live in a country where we can share our values and operate on biblical purposes. Biblical principles. Biblical principles.
Mm.
Here's the question. So I'm not going to Chick-fil-A anyway because
right,
I don't eat fast food and
right.
I'm a vegetarian.
Right.
But say there's a Chick-fil-A here in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Uh-huh.
Do we tell everyone not to go to the Chick-fil-A? And let's complete the story.
Okay.
Odds are the people that are working for Chick-fil-A did not have to pass some sort of test on whether or not they subscribe to biblical principles.
Right.
And there are local folks who now have jobs because Chick-fil-A opened here in Brattleboro.
I would not go there. And if anyone asked me why I don't go there, I would say exactly why. The laundry list of reasons. I would support very openly anyone who also chose not to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Would I go so far as to do a campaign?
What's your threshold?
What's my threshold? If they start getting political in Brattleboro trying to change things here,
mm-hmm.
and if they're mistreating their workers, and they're also, I mean, they also are just serving horrible food.
Oh, it's so yummy.
That's actually even, above everything else, the environmental impact of places like Chick-fil-A is even worse. So I think I would oppose them coming here in the first place.
But nutritionally, it's a sound organization.
Nutritionally, in what sense?
It's really yummy. They butter the buns.
Is it real butter?
That's really not the point of the story.
Okay.
I have air quotes. Butter. People can't
air quote
see it.
Butter.
It's radio.
Bunny
it's radio.
Ears butter.
And the fries are waffle fries.
Uh-huh.
So they're for equality.
Uh-huh.
And waffle fries, because they have all the holes, are more nutritionally sound than
right,
regular fries.
Because,
I mean, that's proven.
Because they're lacking in
they have more air.
Potato.
Right. And so they're not fried because they're waffles. And you don't fry waffles. You could, but you bake them. So, I mean, that's just proven. That's like, this is common sense that the waffle
uh-huh.
fries are better for you than
uh-huh.
normal fries.
Uh-huh.
And then they butter those rolls with butter.
With air quotes,
air quotes
bunny ears
butter.
Butter. Mm.
So that's Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I haven't had Chick-fil-A in 12 years.
Aren't they also the ones who are trying to sue the Eat More Kale folks?
Oh, yeah, they don't like them.
Yeah, so they would never, ever come to Vermont anyway.
Yeah.
They would be run out on a rail just because of that. In addition to everything else that is bad, not nutritionally awesome at all, that alone, they would
what
never.
What if Chick-fil-A calls me up tomorrow and says, Ken, you know, we think that your show operates on biblical principles and we want to give you money. Should I turn away that money?
I would be very interested to hear them say which biblical principles.
Are you saying that I don't operate on biblical principles?
I think you do. I think you do. But I'm curious then which ones they are following if they say that gay things in general are not, but then all of a sudden your show is.
And I quote, "And Moses saith to the Lord, thou shalt butter thy rolls."
With butter.
Now, on the other side, this is very interesting. Kind of a business focus for this week. Target. Now, Target has had a very complicated relationship with the gay community.
Yeah.
Very complicated. They've supported things. They've not supported things. Yeah. People are not sure what to make of them.
Yeah.
They have been a major sponsor of various Pride festivities in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
They score highly on the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, which rates businesses on workplace policies.
Yeah.
But then in 2011, Lady Gaga, she was supposed to have a deal with Target to release Born This Way, and then she pulled the special edition of Born This Way after it was revealed that the brand had donated $150,000 to Minnesota Forward, a group that was backing Tom Emmer's gubernatorial bid in Minnesota. And Emmer was known for being especially conservative and not supporting equal rights for LGBT citizens.
Hmm.
Very complicated. And then a few weeks ago, last week, they made headlines because they decided not to sell Channel Orange, which is the new album by R&B singer Frank Ocean. And we haven't talked about Frank Ocean on the show lately, but Frank Ocean made huge, huge waves when he came out a few weeks ago, which is a big deal for an R&B singer to come out. He reaches a whole different audience.
Yeah.
So that was a really, really big deal. But Target is saying that they're not carrying the album because they said it was purely a reaction to iTunes' one-week exclusive sale of the album. But some wondered if it had been prompted by him coming out. So Target, very complicated relationship. But Target, I love this. So I'm already tipping my hand to how I feel about this.
Yep.
And by that, I mean I love this.
Yes.
They are now selling greeting cards honoring same-sex marriages.
That's so great.
Very cool. As the Minneapolis Star Tribune is reporting, the cards, which are produced by Carlton Cards, a unit of American Greetings.
Wow.
And they're going to hit stores. They just started hitting stores in June. They feature phrases like Mr. and Mr. and two very special women, one very special love.
Yay.
The items began appearing on Target's card racks a month after Minnesota-based retail giant controversially began selling T-shirts commemorating Gay Pride Month, and some people were really against that. So Target spokeswoman Molly Snyder told the Star Tribune, "Target is focused on diversity and inclusivity." I love greeting cards.
I do too, and I love that it's major companies now. I mean, there's definitely been specialty places that have done very expensive sometimes because they are these specialty cards. They're really pricey.
So what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to start – is there a Target near here? There's
yeah,
a Target Keene. In Keene.
Yeah.
Keene, New Hampshire. I'm going to start buying up all these cards, and I'm going to send them to straight couples too and cross out like I used to have to do when there weren't specialty cards. So I'm going to buy the Mr. and Mr., and I'm going to cross out one of the Misters and write in Mrs. And I think that's what I'm going to start doing. Isn't that good? Everyone should be doing that.
Yeah,
and that gives people a taste of what the gay community has had to do for years, or the straight community too, if you wanted to buy more specific greeting cards for same-sex couples. This is the initiative I just came up with. I don't feel like you support it, and I don't know why.
Yeah, not really.
Why?
Because if you love these people, you're going to get them cards that are good for them. You're not going to get them cards that
I don't see why I can't buy a card and send a message.
You can do whatever you want, but that's not what I'm going
to
do.
And Abraham saith to the Lord... Something about butter. Okay, I don't remember, but it was good, and you can look it up in the Bible, because this show is so gay. It's actually one of our new taglines, "This show is so gay," operating on biblical principles since 2008.
With butter.
With butter. I don't know what to do with that, but yes, I think so. The Boy Scouts.
Uh-oh.
The Boy Scouts.
Uh-oh.
The Boy Scouts of America have decided that they will continue to exclude gay members following a confidential... 2-year review process conducted in the midst of mounting public opposition to the policy. According to the Associated Press, the group's national spokesman, Darren Smith, said an 11-member special committee unanimously, quote, came to the conclusion that this policy is absolutely the best policy for the Boy Scouts, end quote. Well, he's pretty unequivocal about it. It is absolutely the best policy for the Boy Scouts. The organization said that members of the confidential committee represented a diversity of perspectives and opinions.
Uh-huh.
From professional scout executives to volunteers. But the big deal is BillErico.com and some other sites are calling for, hey, who was on this committee?
Yeah.
And they're not saying anything about who is on this committee.
Mm.
Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin said, quote, this is a missed opportunity of colossal proportions. With the country moving towards inclusion, the leaders of the Boy Scouts of America have instead sent a message to young people that only some of them are valued. These adults could have taught the next generation of leaders the value of respect, yet they've chosen to teach division and intolerance. And there is a story coming out of Missouri that's hitting a lot of the press waves. Then Eagle Scout in Missouri was just fired from his job as a camp counselor after he came out to the camp director. You know, I guess maybe there's a report that I didn't read. I don't need to read it because there's nothing that they could have written that would justify this. I mean, let's do some speculation. What could they have said? Why this is absolutely in the best interests of the Boy Scouts. I know. I mean, I got nothing.
I really got nothing.
Freaking 2012, people. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even our military has finally admitted, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We shouldn't exclude anymore.
And it's going to have to be another case. Although that was a big court case.
Yeah.
Back
no, it
in,
was.
God, 10, 12, more than that years ago.
Yeah.
James Dale versus the Boy Scouts of America.
Yep.
I got to get James Dale on the show.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I'm sure he's probably in a lot of stories these days. Hmm. So that's happening with the Boy Scouts. Hey, if you're a Boy Scout, send us an email and tell us how this is ridiculous.
Hmm.
The Lieutenant Governor in Florida. I'm headed to Florida this weekend.
Yes, you are.
This is the best story of the week.
Uh-oh.
And by best, I mean it entertains me more than all of the other stories because it's just funny.
Okay.
It's also not funny, but, you know, there's that.
Okay.
Florida's lieutenant governor, she has now denied in an interview that she was in a secret same-sex affair at work. She said that, quote, black women that look like me don't engage in relationships like that. Oh, this is gonna get better.
Wow.
Trust me.
Wow.
This is gonna get better. Jennifer Carroll, an outspoken Christian conservative, was accused in a court filing by a former staffer of getting caught in a compromising position in her office with a travel aide. She sent emails to supporters after the story broke. She denied it all. She said it was a media-fueled rumor. She pledged to fight it. Then in an interview, this is so great. This is an interview with this past Saturday with Tampa Bay's Channel 10 News. She offered a series of odd reasons she couldn't possibly be a lesbian. Let me read to you some of her reasons. Quote, The problem is that when you have these accusations that come out, it's not just one person you're attacking. It's an entire family. My husband doesn't want to hear that. He knows the type of woman I am. My kids know the type of woman I am. Mm-hmm. She pointed to the longevity of her marriage as proof she couldn't be in a lesbian affair because that's...
Yeah, that's always an indicator, yeah.
And she called out accuser Carlitha Cole for being single. This is what she said, quote, it's so bad. Quote, I'm the one that's married for 29 years. The accuser is the one that's been single for a long time. So usually black women that look like me don't engage in relationships like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Relationships like that.
Uh-huh.
Define, Jody?
Like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're in one of those things, right?
One of those things. Well, see, I've been married for a while now. So I'm in a relationship like that, in fact.
How offensive is it to say that I am not the type of woman to be? I mean, it really is a character.
Yeah.
It's a character, both assessment and assassination, that there is only a type of woman who would be a lesbian. And we're not talking about the type of woman who would be attracted to another woman who might fall in love with another woman. We're saying the type of woman as in moral character.
Right, yeah.
Who I am as a human being.
Yeah.
This is a lieutenant governor.
I know. I mean, I say to her, my 12th wedding anniversary is coming up next month, but I've been with my wife for 14 years. That's the relationship that I have, like that.
Right, but now I have a problem that the knee-jerk reaction, which I support everything that you just said, but it puts us on the defensive to have to say we are in more long-term relationships.
Yeah, and I hate that too. Yeah. No, I don't approve of that either.
You feel like you have to say that.
I did.
Right.
I agree.
I agree.
I think that's BS, and I feel bad for the woman who's single. I mean, there are so many people who are single, who are married, who get divorced, who get divorced after 29
Absolutely.
Years, who have affairs even while they're still married, and their partners and husbands and wives never find out. I mean, everyone does everything.
But then there's the part of the story where this isn't, the headline isn't, woman off the street says...
Right.
This is the lieutenant governor of one of the 50 states and quite a swing state and an important state coming up in the election.
Yep.
So
that is
Jennifer Carroll. You all elected her down in Florida.
Ugh.
I will try to get an interview with her when I am down there next week. I am the type of man who could hopefully get an interview with a woman like that. So there's that. there's another story that we don't really have time to cover, but I really encourage folks to check out, and you can just Google the headline, Black Gay Men Are More Affected by AIDS Than Any Population in the Developed World. And it's a really fascinating article.
Hmm.
And I'm ever looking to highlight articles and stories that have to do with HIV and AIDS because it is extraordinarily difficult to find news even as HIV rates continue to not be on the decline. And I'm going to use that negative in that way.
Yeah.
You can go to the This Show Is So Gay Facebook page. Just type in This Show Is So Gay on Facebook and like us. And right there on the This Show Is So Gay Facebook page, there's a video of the concrete quilt experience that we created here in Brattleboro. And I watched it yesterday. I was crying in my office as I was watching it. So folks should check that out.
It is really beautiful.
You can stroll on over, walk on over, skip on over, whatever it is that you do to thisshowisogay.com and learn all about our upcoming guests. Next week, on next week's show, it's very exciting. Next week is Kelly Dunham, who is a nun-turned-comic. So she's going to be super fun.
Wow.
But then also, and I know how little this excites you, but it would if you actually followed my advice at some point, the winner of season 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race, Tyra Sanchez, is going to be on next week's show. And it's not just about, we'll talk about RuPaul's Drag Race. We'll absolutely talk about RuPaul's Drag Race, fear not. But we're actually having Tyra on because Tyra is the subject of a new documentary called Drag Dads. And it's all about her relationship with her son, being a drag queen, being a father, navigating those different relationships. And so it's a really incredible project that she is involved with. So excited to speak with her. Right there on the homepage, if you have $5 to spare, we got charity treks coming up in just a few weeks. Burlington to Portland, Maine, the second week of August. And this is the year that Charity Treks will be passing the $1 million mark in donations to raise money for a cure, to find a cure for HIV and AIDS. And so we'll be biking 415 miles over those 5 days. If you have $5 to spare, you can go to theshowisogay.com and donate your $5. And I would, of course, greatly appreciate that. And I will be doing a show from the road on Charity Trek. So probably not while on my bike, but we'll be interviewing people about their experience. And if you've not done one of these multiple day events, again, the single day events are fun.
Mm-hmm.
If you can only do a single day event, go find your local AIDS walk, go to New York City, whatever it is that you do, find your local one day walk. But if you have the opportunity to do a multiple day event, they are categorically different because that experience of being in a camp with people, the overnight experience, it's just categorically different than the single day event. So I encourage you to do that. And of course, drop us an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. If you have something positive to say or a guest suggestion, if it's something critical, please send that over to Jody@thisshowisogay.com. Someone wrote last week and said, I'm sure that's not a real address. I swear to you, it's a real address. Jody@thisshowisogay.com. That's where you send your critical feedback. And that is pretty much it for this week's show. Obviously, a huge thanks to Sophie B. Hawkins.
Mm.
That was a dream come true. Get out there, folks. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make this world a better place for everybody around you. And while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?